Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Armchair Expert early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Or you can listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Armchair Expert, Experts on Expert. We have two physical phenoms today as our experts.
We sure do.
Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe. Sue, of course, is a WNBA champion and Olympic gold medalist. Megan is a two-time World Cup champion, Olympic gold medalist, and best-selling author. They've got a new podcast that's out on Wednesdays weekly called A Touch More, the podcast. So I encourage everyone to listen to that. This was very fun. Couples are fun.
They are fun. They are fun. And they have such a great rapport. And they're so interesting. And it's a subject we don't know that much about.
And they have a great Rapinoe. In addition to their rapport. Please enjoy Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe. We are supported by Audible. Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Mm. Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full cast production of George Orwell's 1984. This is the one I am most excited to indulge myself with.
I'm so excited to listen to James, which is a new title by Percival Everett that is very, very hot right now.
Well, there's so many good ones on the list.
We love Audible. This is how you go to bed.
I love Audible. I swear by Audible. I can't wait to listen to the Orwell 1984 off this list. I'm also doing Flea's autobiography right now, which I'm obsessed with. I can't get enough Audible in my life every night. Go to audible.com/Dax and discover all the year's bests waiting for you. That's audible.com/Dax. We are supported by Audible. Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Mm. Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full cast production of George Orwell's 1984. This is the one I am most excited to indulge myself with.
I'm so excited to listen to James, which is a new title by Percival Everett that is very, very hot right now.
Well, there's so many good ones on the list.
We love Audible. This is how you go to bed.
I love Audible. I swear by Audible. I can't wait to listen to the Orwell 1984 off this list. I'm also doing Flea's autobiography right now, which I'm obsessed with. I can't get enough Audible in my life every night. Go to audible.com/Dax and discover all the year's bests waiting for you. That's audible.com/Dax. He's an armchair expert. Oh, my God.
Are you all right?
Well, let's see if I can recover. I mean, that's a big one.
That's
the most egregious in 7 years.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
It will happen.
But not today. That was Sue and Megan.
I know.
Athletes have to be on time.
Yeah.
The coach will kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that is
it's
true.
It's like drilled in our existence.
Wait, let me take in your shirt. Loving Rockets.
I just got it.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, I overpaid for it, but it's fine.
Okay, I was listening to one of y'all's episodes, and I thought for a second we were going to have a huge issue between Monica and y'all.
Oh, I can't wait. Is it?
Because one of their sponsors is The Row.
Stop.
But it's not that row.
Okay.
I was like, it is?
Is it? I hope so.
Are they sponsoring us?
Everyone's eyes just got huge.
I would love to be sponsored by The Row.
Me what? Too.
I think The Row you guys were promoting was some area of some town where there's lots of shops.
Oh, down and there's a row.
I don't even know.
I think it's like an area. It was like, visit this and this. But when I first heard The Row, I was like, oh, Monica's going to be really upset.
We love The Row too, though.
Oh,
dream sponsor.
I don't think the twins sponsor anyone or give discounts or give a fuck about anyone, honestly.
No.
They sure don't. I've heard about their friends and family discount. It's quite minimal.
Oh, even a friend or a family?
I think they do have it probably just for Elizabeth Olsen.
Elizabeth, what's she paying?
She gets 10% off.
10%?
You know,
it's
not probably.
But probably.
If my siblings, you have a twin.
I have a twin, yeah.
We
it's
love
scary
that.
Interviewing two people
yeah.
and learning
yeah.
so much about
and, like,
two different
dating
people.
Dating two people.
Yeah.
Not really, but
Rachel.
Rachel, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird.
You guys are fraternal.
Yeah.
If your twin sister, Rachel, started, that's not a good comp because it's Elizabeth we're talking about.
Right.
You would expect to get way more than 10% off your sister, right?
I would expect it all for free.
Yeah,
free 99 for sure. I'm coming in there and you need to tell everyone at every store in the world who I am. And I'm just like, as if it's a closet. Yeah.
The sister's here. Yeah. The sister, everybody. Yeah. It's like a secret shopper times a million.
And you get the hem, but it happens that day. They get it.
They need to be on site.
Correct.
No, I'm getting everything for free.
I know. Aren't they so cool there? They're so elusive. Do you like elusive, or are you like, that's too much? I mean, obviously like the row, but in general, elusive.
To a certain extent, but sometimes I'm like, well, how do you get it? You know?
I
guess that's the point.
It's the work.
I'm on the outside. Sometimes when it's too much, I mean, like the restaurant situation we're talking about with reservations in New York sometimes.
How long have you guys lived in New York?
Just a year. I'm from there originally.
Long Island.
Long Island, yep. Uh-huh. So it's like a coming home, which is really nice. Megan always wanted to live there, so I was like, great.
You're from Reading?
Yeah.
Okay, Reading's a vibe. Let's talk about Reading for a second.
You're the only person that
Oh, yeah, I've been there for sure. I think when you think of California, you think of LA and San Francisco and super progressive and liberal. But Reading's kind of blue collar.
Yeah.
It's not what people would think of with California.
No. Honestly, whenever I tell people from California, they're like, cool. And I'm like, not that one. And then they go north and they're like, cool. And I'm like, not that either. Yeah. They're like, what else is there? Like,
Do you surf, mean? Redwoods, or
I know. Reading is really interesting because it's situated right on I-5. So it's this sort of throughway all up and down the West Coast.
In the meth pipeline.
Totally.
Yeah,
in the meth pipeline. Wow. Drug use is, especially historically, totally rampant, especially meth. But then it's right next to the Golden Triangle, which is the best weed in the world.
But also gnarly shit happening in the Golden Triangle.
It's progressive in the like anarchist zero government kind of. So it's like where hippies meet no government and you're like, what's happening here?
Yeah, sovereign citizens meet hippies.
And then there is also traditional granola hippie vibes going on in and around Reading. I think a lot of people go there to like be left alone or have gone there to be left alone. But then it's also just a very normal conservative. And then there's like this evangelical church has gotten really big up there, Bethel, which I don't fuck with at all. And they've gotten into like conversion therapy and mysticism. And it's, to me, bad news bears. And it's just a wild place.
You have super fun eyes. That's just an earmark. Who are we having where we realized the magic power? Oh, it was Heidi Klum.
Oh.
Where the eyes are somehow a third mouth. They're very expressive. Would you agree as someone who stares in her eyes a lot?
Her face is very expressive.
Yeah, and the eyes almost can smile or something.
Yeah, no, you tell a lot with your facial expressions for
sure.
I know,
good and bad.
Yeah.
Same.
Or like,
same
it could be goofy, it could be kooky.
Your face betrays you a lot?
I mean, yeah.
I don't think she minds people knowing that.
Yeah, true, that's true.
Okay, so you're from a very huge family.
Huge, yeah.
What did mom and dad do in Reading?
My mom was a waitress for the whole time we lived there. She actually just retired a couple years ago, Jack's Grill, which is like a really cool sort of simple steakhouse bar. It was one of the nicer restaurants, but it's not like nice. It's
saltines on the table. When you're
there. No, like white tablecloth or anything. And then my dad mostly worked in construction.
And were they born in Reading or were they part of some diaspora hippie anarchist?
Not even hippie anarch. I don't know.
The car broke down in Reading on the way up
they
the five.
They were in San Diego and I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
And then when they got together, they moved to Carson City. I think my mom's mom was sick at the time. They went to take care of her. And then I don't know how they ended up in Reading. I still have a lot of questions of what happened there. And then they never left.
Okay. And then seven siblings? Six siblings.
You need a tree.
It's like five or seven.
Yes.
My oldest sister is actually my aunt. It's my mom's youngest sister who she raised. And my youngest brother is my nephew. It's my brother's child that my parents raised.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I say seven. It's really five.
Who cares?
I just leave it out there for people.
It's a big Christmas is what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
How mysterious.
Oh, my God.
Sue has one sister, and she's like, whoa.
That's a big old change.
No,
well, that's
great.
Kind of what I'm hoping to establish is it does feel like opposites attract in a lot of fun ways.
Yeah.
Just learning the seven Reading versus Long Island, Russian Jewish father, one older sister. What's the vibe in Long Island in 1980?
What movie was it? Now and Then?
Oh,
it's kind of like that. Like all
it.
The houses are the same.
Okay.
You can ride your bike everywhere. Like pretty chill, middle class.
What little pocket of Long Island?
Syosset. So it's in Nassau County, North Shore.
Any other famous alumni?
Yeah.
Who?
Natalie Portman.
Oh, shit.
Judd Apatow.
What's her last name, though?
Wow. Herschlag.
Herschlag, yeah.
Yeah. So Natalie was a year younger than I was.
Oh, she went to your high school?
Yeah.
She switched high schools, yeah?
She did.
You did, too.
I also
too.
Did, yeah. So we only went to high school 1 or 2 years.
Whoa, how bizarre.
She came in.
Right.
I left like a year or two later.
That's crazy. She had already been in The Professional.
Yeah. So she came into school. We're like, oh, shit, that's the actress.
Okay, great. We can do a parallel with Caitlin right now.
Yeah.
That was the episode I listened to.
Okay.
The basketball player. Were people gunning for her?
No.
No.
Not at
all. They
were
excited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Honestly, the way she is now when you're around her, almost unassuming,
yeah,
just kind of chill, same thing. Obviously, was just in a blockbuster movie, if you will, and just totally chill.
Yeah.
I can't even explain it. I don't want to downplay who she was, but at the same time, it was like, she wore sweats to school.
Yeah. Wow.
Just so
just
chill.
Just another kid.
Just another kid.
She wasn't walking around like a movie star in
Not
ninth
at all.
Grade.
Not at all.
And you come into sports because your older sister is interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the age gap there?
5 years.
Same. I have the same
it's
gap.
It's a lot when you're younger.
Okay. So I'm going to project onto you.
Okay.
Did you have this experience where in your mind you were like, well, I'm the weakest, worst at everything in the world. And then I started competing with my peers, my age. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of strong. Like, because I'd only been wrestling with this
yeah,
dude 5 years older than me my whole life. And then when I got around people my age, I was like, oh, I'm a good skateboarder. I thought I was a terrible skateboarder.
No, not really.
Okay, great.
But, but only because we had very quickly different lanes. She's way smarter than I am. Academics was her thing. She also played sports, but sports was my thing.
Yeah.
And okay, so we didn't have a lot of competition in sports. I probably was beating her like very early. So you had an older brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different for boys. Like we weren't wrestling. It wasn't like a physical.
I beat him up at 14 when he was 19. It was the greatest day of my life.
I bet. Yeah.
Probably to
That's
this
how
day.
I felt when I first like scored on my dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, my dad's 6'3". I'm only 5'9". So who knows what I was then, 5 foot. And when I finally scored on my dad while we were just like shooting at the park, that was like a big day.
Okay, so this would be a good advice column moment for you. Parent-wise, so I struggle with this because I have two little girls and I play a lot of things with them. And I'm always like, oh, how much am I going to let them? I want to, you know, I want to give them the taste.
Don't let them win.
Oh
don't
my
let,
God.
Don't really?
Let them win. Don't let
Ever?
Them win. That's hardcore.
Don't you think they should feel the win once so that they chase it?
No, you want them to get it on their own.
Because
when you earn that, that's yours forever.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm not saying if it was basketball. It's not like you got to block their shot crazy all the time.
Every time.
You
don't have to like, every time.
Yeah, to come in and tumble them. But no, you don't have to like let them.
Yeah, this actually happened.
R.I.P. Very sad.
Yeah, with Rachel and I and our older brother, Michael, he kicked our ass in basketball. He's like 10 years older than us. Like more, he's probably 15 years older than us.
Yeah,
he's so much older.
You don't even know. You still don't know anything about any of the siblings.
He's either my uncle or my son.
Yeah.
In that family?
One of them.
So we don't know. And we played him like 2v1. We were probably 14 years old. He was barefoot in the street. He tore his feet up so bad. He had to put like maxi pads on his feet. And he kicked our ass and he gloated about it. And we were just like, first of all, whatever. You're fucking grown man.
Obviously, loser.
You're going to beat us. But we were pissed. Like, he could very easily let us win. We were just like, no. We had to try our hardest. I mean, we didn't beat him, and I'm sure we took it out on some other kids at school. Probably took it out on our basketball team.
Okay, here's where I'm doing it. This feels right. Okay. They just started playing basketball.
How old are they?
9 and 11.
Okay.
We'll play pig.
Okay.
We're not up to horse yet. We'll play pig. A, I'm shooting close so they can make it. I'm not like out above the arc trying to make it. It's not a fun game if they have zero and they're pig every time. Go ahead.
Mm.
Not the move.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm like trying to think. When I play with my nieces, same. I don't shoot like deep threes off the dribble. I'm not like
Can I add,
that.
She has the best 3-point shooting percentage in NCAA history, I think. 48.4.
Holy
That's
shit.
An impossible like that. 3-point percentage.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, played on good teams.
No, that's not how that
no,
works.
No, I'm joking.
They're good because you're on
Well, I don't think that would affect your percentage.
Honestly, I'll tell you why I shot well in college. So I was injured my freshman year, basically missed the whole year. So I really only played 3 years in college. And the fall of my sophomore year, it's very common in preseason, you have these 6 a.m. workouts. So we had them 3 times a week. After every 6 a.m. workout, he would make me shoot threes. It wasn't crazy, like 30, 45 minutes, but like 3 times a week for 2 months,
just
basically
leading
a season. Yeah, me and a coach. And then he would watch.
And I'm sure you don't have the actual metrics, but how much did your percentage change?
Good
just
question.
From that exercise of a year.
In shooting percentages, if it goes up 2%, that's ginormous. I bet if you looked at my freshman year to my sophomore year, I bet there was easily a 15% jump.
Wow.
I'll just add that Jordan never, ever scored more than 39% of his 2-point shots. somewhere in that range.
You don't need them on.
We love Last Dance, but not after meeting you.
Yeah. We already have Sue. We can't bring them on.
Embarrassing.
But I'll tell you what, he didn't take it easy on me. I'm answering your question.
Yeah. Okay.
He was a pain in my ass, to be honest.
You know, my kids aren't professional sports bound either. So you're kind of like, what's the point of this? Are we supposed to have fun?
Well, at what age is that determined if they're going to be professional sports bound or not?
And even a broader question that I think is really relevant is, do you think the parent has to lead it or do you think the kid has to lead it? I'm of the opinion that the kid's going to demonstrate that that's for them or not.
I agree.
You do agree.
100%.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay. I think that's both of our experiences.
Yeah. There's, of course, times where they're tired or they're being little shits or whatever. And you're like, no, these are things that are important. And my parents were always like, you guys lead. But the one thing they were like, you're going to try hard. If we half-assed it or something, they were like, oh, no. We're not putting all this time and effort in for that. And there's certain life things that you've got to teach your kids. But I think in general, it kind of shows itself. In kindergarten, we were like busting kids' ass in kindergarten. We're
very
the most
early.
Athletic kids in kindergarten.
Yeah.
Like from a young age, you're probably going to be showing some signs of athletic
aptitude.
Talent and aptitude. Just like if you were, you know,
music. Anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But your family in particular, they were committing a ton of time. They were driving you like 2.5 hours to go compete somewhere.
Sacramento. In the Bay Area.
Yeah. So I guess when they do show that interest, you're just there to support, i.e. drive them five hours.
Exactly. They honestly had very frank conversations with us of like, if you two want to do this, great. We'll sacrifice our whole life for this. No problem. No, they were like, we'll do this, but we're not going to be dragging you through it. They made that very clear. And we were like, no, we want to do it. And they were like, okay, let's go.
How did the competition between you and Rachel play out?
I think when we were younger, it was in a play sense. We just played everything together all the time. I think we made it similar to your relationship with your older brother. It was like we made each other better because we could go without any insecurity as hard as we wanted at each other. And we played one-on-one baseball, one-on-one football, one-on-one basketball, one-on-one. Like we played one-on-one everything. Ghost runners galore.
I love a good ghost runner.
You're batting and running and hitting all at the same time.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have that jealousy of each other. We more so were like, we're playing this together. We always played different positions. We went through different times where like she was a lot better than me pretty much until midway through high school. I feel like I hit puberty kind of later. She was always much better and more confident midway through high school, maybe like my junior year. I feel like I grew and grew into myself. But we were both great.
The best two of your team in high school?
Yeah, of our team.
How about when you went to Portland?
Portland was a little bit more difficult, honestly, for both of us. We both had a lot of injuries. Rachel was severely anemic her freshman year, and she didn't know it, and it was undiagnosed. So it was kind of like a shame on her thing of like, you're not working hard enough or you're not fit. But really, she was severely anemic. So all through her first year, it was really difficult.
And were they able to treat that really quickly?
Yeah. She had to get iron infusions. She was in like the cancer ward, bags of iron. Yeah, it was really crazy. Her levels were at like 1 and 2. Her hemoglobin levels, it was really bad.
Oof.
She actually went a season before I did. So I deferred my first season because I was playing in a youth World Cup. So she played a season before and then I came. She was really struggling with her anemia. I was playing and then my sophomore year and junior year, I was out with knee injuries. Her junior and senior year, sophomore and junior year, she was out. So we really only played together basically our senior season, which was great. She played forward and I was a winger and we had a lot of fun together. But it was hard because we were kind of parallel pathing these really difficult things and we were trying to figure ourselves out and had no language to do that.
Yeah.
And we're twins and the world's comparison when it comes to twins is difficult. No matter what, you're always going to be compared to each other because it's like, how are the twins? How are the babies?
It's such a story for people.
Totally.
We want to know everything.
Yeah. And so it was, I think, hard for both of us in ways to really understand and navigate that. And now, like 20 years later, we're starting to talk about it. So it's good.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, you're like a married couple in that you have a shared identity way more than just normal siblings do.
Totally.
How does that compound coming out? Does it?
Well, it compounded it because I outed us both to my mom.
Oh.
Let me tell you how I compounded that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, honestly.
Put it in a compounder.
Yeah, I have a tendency to be spontaneous in the best of ways, but it's also really impulsive. So I'm working on integrating
also
that.
Just what if your mom asks you, is Rachel also gay? And you went,
It's your eyes.
Your eyes. Your eyes did a whole thing.
I think it was your mouth too this time.
Yeah. Came right out of my mouth. I just honestly thought my mom would be like, well, obviously we know. When I figured it out for myself, I was like, oh my God, this is kind of embarrassing, Megan. This is really obvious. But so I didn't really have the struggle with it. And so when I told my mom, I think it was just hard for her in the beginning. This is not the dream that she saw. Not that it was bad. It was just, she was like unprepared for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, Rachel's gay too. Obviously, this is fine. And we're both doing it.
Oh, fine. My
it's normal.
God.
So that was tougher. And I think she struggled with it a little bit more. And she was kind of struggling with her religious views. And she was in this sort of evangelical, fake progressive church that was honestly just kind of hateful and really conversion therapy vibe. So I think she was really struggling and struggling to find herself. And then I outed her to my mom. So I'm really sorry, Rachel. I'm still sorry to this day for that.
Well, my intuition would be that you would come out to Rachel first. And then also yeah. I could see where you'd come out to her last because of this shared identity thing.
Yeah, it was almost like we were kind of figuring ourselves out at the same time. It's like when you're so close, you can't see it. And so we were both doing it at the same time and it was confusing. And we both went to college for the first time. It was like we were in Portland. It's so progressive compared to Reading.
Yeah.
Everything was just new.
Yeah.
Coming from such a small place.
Is it interesting for you that you had this shared identity and in some ways you two have a shared identity, also very public shared identity. It's like in some ways you've hopped.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know I'm codependent. I'm working on it. Serial monogamous, I know.
But we just have patterns, right?
Yeah, totally. We talk about this a lot. I think especially since we've both retired. I think when we were both playing, it was just naturally separated. Now we have to work really hard to have separate realms. And it's been hard and we're figuring that out. It's really only a year into both of us being retired.
No, this seems like one of the most dangerous situations possible because I have a few friends that are either married to professional athletes or I know a couple. Almost universally, retirement's rough for so many reasons, and maybe you'll tell us about them. But if you just take the schedule, your whole life is scheduled and has been for decades, and then it's not. That's so disruptive.
Very.
Yeah.
I know. Honestly, we just interviewed Alex Morgan recently.
Oh, cool.
She also retired.
Yes.
And she brought up this one element about showering. So to really make your point about scheduling, when you're an athlete, your shower is built in. You're showering after the game. You're showering after practice. You really don't have to think about showering. And now all of a sudden, it was like 24 hours are going by and I'm like, I haven't showered.
Yeah.
So even down to the shower.
Yeah, I bet.
It's disruptive. And this change is disruptive.
And you build on top of it. Or many athletes, right, build on top of it. Then their own weird routine that is kind of superstitious and control-oriented, right? So it's like also this other thing was scaffold on top of it, but the foundation has disappeared. So now your own little weird rituals, too, are probably changing.
Yeah. It's like you kind of have to be a little psycho to be a professional athlete. You have to have that routine. The routine is great because it's so structured, but it's also really unhealthy in a lot of ways because you're forcing yourself to do the exact same thing every day.
They disguise it with words like discipline.
Right.
Yeah. But it's really like crazy.
It's controlled.
Oh, yeah. Very.
What I would imagine is it's a great distraction from your whole life. Like it's a bubble you enter at a certain time of the day.
Totally.
And you can only focus on a single thing and ignore all the childhood stuff.
You're rewarded for things that aren't necessarily going to help you in your personal life.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like when you retire, you have to come face to face with that in a big way, or at least I did.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I hear is really disorienting is being the member of a team. I think from the outside, I remember I watched a great doc on Brett Favre and he got very depressed after retirement and all these things happened. And people would think it's like, oh, they miss the attention. And it's like, that's not it at all. They miss a purpose. They miss the team, I hear, is the big thing.
It's very safe on a team.
Mm-hmm.
I always say teams are so interesting because you will simultaneously know who your teammates are dating. For us, I'm like, I know when my teammates have their period.
Right.
Who needs a tampon? And then at the same time, I don't even know if all my teammates had siblings. I don't know if I know their hometowns
weird
all the
kind
time.
Of intimacy.
So yeah, you're like simultaneously so intimate and then also not. But it is really safe because that intimacy is automatic. Once someone comes on your team, that's it. You are in lockstep. You got each other's back. If they got traded the next day, you'd be like, see ya. And you wouldn't think twice.
It's a shared goal. And that's like driving the entire
thing. Yes. And it connects you in these really wonderful ways. But I think to your point, when you don't have that, it's been such a safe place. In some ways, it shows up as family. By the way, even with all this intimacy, the difference is you do have very real relationships with your teammates too. The ones you click with do become family, whether it's the end of a season or a retirement. All of a sudden you go your separate ways and then you just might not see them for months and months and months.
Yeah, this is the most literal manifestation of in-group, out-group tribalism, which is like, you're a team, you're a group. It is you against everyone, not even figuratively, it's you against the world. And how about when they depart and you see them again as a competitor?
Oof, that sounds awful and sad.
It's not.
Really?
Yeah, if anything, if it's someone you're cool with, you can't wait to go out to dinner with them.
Okay.
And then when you're on the court or the field, whatever, you just do it. You compartmentalize very well with that.
This is exactly the thing that you were talking about that maybe isn't great for life. This level of being able to compartmentalize to such a degree is great in sport, but in life,
tough.
Not great.
Not so great.
It just doesn't work in life that way to compartmentalize your emotions and the things that you want. You have to ask different questions, even to your point about attention. It's not necessarily the missed attention. It's the very clear value structure for yourself of like, where do I find my worth? In sports, it's like, if you're doing X, Y, and Z.
It's a meritocracy.
Yeah, in sports, it is a meritocracy. Like, you know, I have to do this, 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 and this in order to do this. And then if I do that, then I'm going to be valued and I feel good about myself and everybody else feels good. And then when you stop playing, it's like, well, where do you find your value? My sister asked me that the other day.
How do you even evaluate yourself?
How do you even evaluate? Yeah, she was like, where do you find your value?
I don't know.
I literally was like, I don't think I know yet. Yeah. Because
assists
what
and
is life?
Goals.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't really know. I'm starting to figure out what kind of things I like, or even just our relationship to working out and our bodies. Those have always just had answers.
Yeah.
And now it's like we're having to answer all these questions. And for us, we played for a long time. So it's also coming at this time in life. You're 43, about to be 44. I'm 39. It's already the sort of second coming of the existential crisis anyways.
Yeah, so
it's all coming at that time. And now you're like, well, what even is life?
You guys should remodel an apartment and have two kids
We did the apartment. The kids were holding
off for now. But the other part that I would just add to that is, for me especially, you go from never having your needs in the forefront. I got very comfortable, like my needs don't matter. The team's needs matter.
Yeah.
As long as I'm servicing that, this machine works. And then my value gets shown, right? And then I get rewarded. And then you go into your real life and you're like, I have to tell you what my needs are?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do I do that?
What are they?
Yeah, so at 43, well, I retired at 41. I was like, how do I tell even Megan what my needs are? Yeah. I don't know how to do this.
Are you guys in couples therapy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With Orna?
No. I love the show, though.
We love the show.
We love it. The hair. I don't know how it's that disheveled and that perfect. All
I know.
At the same time.
I'm like, is it wrapped up and braided?
The show always comes in with something new.
Oh, I want to know if there's a method, though. I want to see, is it like a big wild, like a pizza dough? Like, you wrap and then it just...
She just has one braid.
Yeah, then she has the braid. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always perfect. Never been the same way twice.
No.
Oh, so true. Oh, we love a couple's therapy.
There should be an Instagram account for Orna's hair.
Oh my God.
If there isn't already. I've never searched.
We got to talk to Netflix about that.
Exactly.
We got to talk to him.
Okay, so you're coming from a much different childhood than you are.
Maybe use names for people who are.
That would have been smart. Sue and Megan are coming from much different childhoods.
For our listeners.
I'm not talking about Monica. Yet it's funny, as I read your guys' path through high school and then college, there are these weird overlaps. I would imagine there's this confusing amount of shared experience and completely different experience. I even look at the injuries. Your ACL injury comes in what, sophomore year?
Freshman year.
Freshman year, Sue's ACL injury. And then Megan, you start getting ACL injuries. Now, is everyone just getting ACL injuries at the time? Or is it suspicious that you guys
Everybody is. Very common.
To me, that might be the hardest part of doing this. You're mentally convincing yourself you're immortal and invulnerable and all these things. And when one of those pops up, I have to imagine it's way worse mentally than it is physically.
Yeah. You're dependent on your body in a way that you have no control over. And we always talk about like, control the controllables. There's so many cliches in sports, but some of them are true. And you do, you try to control as much as you can. So maybe you eat right, you sleep, you work out a certain way, you make sure you're strong. And yet you still have no control over it. And yet you're totally dependent on it, because if you tear your ACL, you hurt your finger, whatever it is, you can't play. And there's your livelihood. But it really didn't stress me out till later in my career.
It didn't. Because what I would hate to find out as I'm starting, like college, the ride's really just starting. Ooh, I'm vulnerable to that. Am I always going to be vulnerable to that? Can I still exert? Can I ignore that? Can I convince myself it's actually now been repaired and it's stronger? How does one navigate all those thoughts?
I mean, in my experience, tearing my ACL my freshman year is the best thing that could have happened to me.
Oh, plot twist.
Yeah, it woke me up in a way. I think I was very talented, obviously. You know, you don't go to UConn if you're not talented, but I needed something that was going to wake me up to really put me on a track where, like, I need to work harder. It was just a reset that I needed. Physically, I was young enough and, you know, you're a little ignorant. You're like, okay, I'll fix this. It'll be fine. I'll move on. You don't understand the magnitude of it.
Right.
So you're lucky. I was 18 years old. Like, I don't fucking know. When I look back, by far the best thing that could have happened, like I said, it just put me on this other track of focus that I really needed. And now I'm not taking it for granted. I'm actually focused on this, what people call a craft now. I wouldn't have called it then, but you're focused on your craft. You're trying to get better. I'm doing the shooting workouts at 6 a.m. I'm not complaining about it. It just put me in a whole other place.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
Apple Card is the perfect card for your holiday shopping. When you use Apple Card on your iPhone, you'll earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, including products at Apple, like a new iPhone 16 or Apple Watch Ultra. Apply now in the Wallet app on your iPhone. Subject to credit approval, Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch. Terms and more at applecard.com. We are supported by Expedia. Having an adventure on the books gives you somewhere to look forward to.
The excitement, the anticipation.
Just living in the fantasy of it. And that's why Expedia, Hotels.com, and Vrbo have launched Unpacked 2025, an annual report on the trends in travel for the upcoming year. It's a great way to figure out where you want to go on your next adventure. We checked out the Unpacked 25 site, and it's really, really cool. They have a section called Detour Destinations that highlights lesser-known cities near major travel spots. So let's say you're thinking of traveling to Cancun. Why not venture off the beaten path for a couple days to check out Expedia's detour destination, Cozumel? Now, Cozumel, Mexico is fantastic. I've been. That's a great detour. Hey, maybe you could even make Cozumel your vacation's main destination. Because there's nothing better than traveling, but having a trip to look forward to is a close second. Book your somewhere to look forward to at Expedia.com/unpack25. We are supported by Quince. The fall season is in full force. Even here in LA, we're starting to experience a little bit of sweater weather. It's the perfect time to pull out a cozy cashmere sweater or a nice leather jacket. Whatever keeps you feeling warm and stylish. That's why this season, we're thankful to be partnering with Quince. Quince offers affordable, high-quality essentials for any wardrobe. We're talking seasonal must-haves like Mongolian cashmere sweaters from $60 and comfortable pants for any occasion, including Thanksgiving dinner. I hope they have a little elastic in the waist.
I have a button-down. It's like a little denim button-down. It's very cute, and it's very versatile because you can dress it up or down. You can wear it over something that's like a little shimmery or be very cash. And, you know, I love any excuse to shop, and a new season is a really good excuse.
Yeah, there's no better place. Upgrade your wardrobe with pieces made to last with Quince. Go to quince.com/Dax for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/Dax to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Dax. We are supported by Addy.
I know about Addy, the little pink pill, right?
Yes, that's right. Addy is the FDA-approved pink pill, clinically proven to boost desire in certain premenopausal women who are bothered by a low libido.
I love this. It's really nice that there's an option out there for women who are dealing with low desire. Mm. And I like that Addy's non-hormonal and created by a woman for women. Addy is helping women feel like themselves again, and that's really important.
It really is. So armchairies, if your libido could use a little jumpstart, Addy's got you covered.
Learn more at Addy.com.
That's A-D-D-Y-I.com.
Addy, or flibanserin, is for premenopausal women with acquired generalized hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD, who have not had problems with low sexual desire in the past, who have low sexual desire no matter the type of sexual activity, the situation, or the sexual partner. The low sexual desire is troubling to them and is not due to a medical or mental health problem, problems in the relationship, or medicine or other drug use. Addy is not for use in men or to enhance sexual performance. Your risk of severe low blood pressure and fainting is increased if you drink 1 to 2 standard alcoholic drinks close in time to your Addy dose. Wait at least 2 hours after drinking before taking Addy at bedtime. Your risk of severe low blood pressure and fainting is also increased if you take certain prescriptions, over-the-counter or herbal medications, or have liver problems. Low blood pressure and fainting can happen when you take Addy, even if you don't drink alcohol or take other medicines. Do not take if you are allergic to any of the ingredients in Addy. Allergic reactions may include hives, itching, or trouble breathing. Sleepiness, sometimes serious, can occur. Common side effects include dizziness, nausea, tiredness, difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, and dry mouth. See full PI and medication guide, including boxed warning, at addy.com/PI. Or call 844-PINK-PILL.
Addy.
That's ADDYI.com. Was the work to be done a strength training in a way that would protect the knee, or was it playing a different game?
For me, it was more mental. Basically, I went from a relaxed version of myself to an incredibly focused version of myself.
Okay.
I could see almost getting addicted to that.
Yeah, it's like a way of life.
Coming out of an injury stronger.
Well, they think about for Shaun White, how much of that's part of his story. Like yeah. Getting counted out, huge face injury, almost dead, exactly. Olympics looming. Okay, now I have the fuel in the system. I need a story. Ultimately, it's what's fucking crazy about our brains. Yeah. It's like we can lock onto this story and it's got a heroic outcome. You can find another gear. How did yours manifest itself?
I feel the same Megan. In that I am, what'd you say?
Megan.
Megan.
No, you're dead right. Yeah, you're dead right. Megan. You're dead right.
I feel the same in that I'm really thankful that happened. Yeah. So it happened after my freshman year, beginning of my sophomore year, 5 or 10 games in. I had a great freshman year. I knew I was good. But I think that year in college against the best competition, we won my freshman year. We won the national championship. You couldn't tell me shit. I was like, I'm the bomb.
This is going to happen every year.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm the shit. I'm so arrogant. My head's big. I'm just like strutting into my sophomore year and then got injured. Even that injury, similar to what you're saying, physically, I'm like, oh, I got this. I'm going to get back quicker than anyone. Kind of like still in that same mindset. And then I did it again a year later. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I get it. I'm not in charge.
Oh.
Fully not in charge here.
Okay.
I think it took me out of myself and gave me this sense, and I have more language for it now than I would have back then. And this is how I've approached all my injuries since then. It's like, this is part of it. You don't get to control everything. You're not in charge of everything. You're not God. You do what you can. You control what you can control. You can work really hard and set yourself up. But ultimately, sports, the fittest you are, the closer you are to an injury. The better you are and the more fit you are, I feel like you're always on that razor's edge.
Well, because you're playing as hard as you possibly
can. You're playing as hard as you can. You're working as hard as you can. You're as fit as
you're pushing the limits.
Yeah, you're pushing the limits. You're always kind of right there. That's a risk that you take. You know, I tore my ACL again when I was 30. I obviously tore my Achilles at the end of my career, literally the last step I took. I tore my Achilles.
Did you feel it go
also
up your
iron,
back?
Yeah.
So she got kicked. Gross. It was like the classic. Who kicked me?
I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I was leaving. I was like, I'm leaving. I was already leaving.
God.
When I was young, I feel like it gave me this perspective that was just like, this is part of it. This is life.
Could
it's an opportunity.
It a surrender?
Yeah,
definitely.
Like a surrender to reality.
Yeah.
But there's also like an opportunity. So I've had probably 8 lower extremity surgeries, 6 on my knee, 1 on each of my hips. And each one, you're a little different after.
Yeah.
You can never go back. So that's the surrender part. It's really hard to let go of the previous version of yourself as an athlete and try to now create a new. But once you do surrender and once you get comfortable, I think, with whatever this new adaptation is going to be, you're like, oh, it might be better. Yeah. And then you get a little psycho about that. And then you get a little addicted to that.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see that.
You have both won titles and championships and medals in different domains, be it high school, college, Olympics, FIFA, all these. How would we rank these? And do you guys agree with the elation? Because I know I talk to a lot of comedians who we all agree, it just didn't get better than when we were performing for free at a theater without any expectation. That was really the most fun it ever was.
Here.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, Olympics feels special, national teams feel special, all these things feel special. is there a way to rank them? And do you agree on the ranking?
Oh, that's a tough one. I feel like I could rank yours. No, I don't know. The most special, special one, because it was my first, was my gold medal in 2012. That was my first world championship. We had been in the World Cup final the year before, we lost. And then obviously 2019, for a lot of different reasons, was, I feel like, the crown jewel in my career. But that one, because it was my first, it was special. I'm, you know, an American kid obsessed with the Olympics since I was little.
Oh, and back to the injury part. A lot of people don't talk about the Olympics is so stressful because if you get injured, that's it.
Yeah, so
you don't
short.
Get to participate. It's not a season where you're like, oh, I'm out for a couple weeks or I'm a couple months and I'll get back. I've had teammates that have torn their ACLs or done something right before the Olympics and then you just don't get the chance.
Yeah.
So I feel like Olympics,
that'll be separates. 4 years again.
Yeah. Again.
And it might have passed you up.
Are you able to integrate that sense of doing it for your country? Is that part of the high?
Definitely. And that definition, I think, has changed over time as I became more educated about the history of America and what I was standing up for and just who I am in America as a woman, as a gay woman, what that means. But I always took an incredible amount of pride to be able to represent America. It's not always the version of America that everybody else wants to talk about or some people don't want to talk about. Certainly after kneeling with Colin Kaepernick, that was a different sense. But I always took a lot of pride in being like, oh, no, I'm American, too.
Yeah,
this is also
I'm representing America.
I mean, you guys always had that. I feel like women's basketball just intersects with every sort of ism possible. But I always took a lot of pride in being like, well, I'm American, too.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
For sure.
And how about for you?
I'm like, going back and forth in my head on what I want to pick here. I think for me, it is the Olympics. That's probably the tippy top. And that's because there was no WNBA for me growing up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yes, I wanted to get a college scholarship and that was kind of the immediate goal. But then it was the Olympics. That to me was, you've made it.
Yeah,
you're an Olympian. You heard about people going overseas, which I obviously did, but you know, I'm not 15 dreaming about going overseas to play basketball.
Right.
I'm 15 dreaming about being an Olympian.
Yeah.
So to achieve that, for that reason, it's kind of hard to beat, but I am jockeying between what makes something more rewarding. Is it the stakes? Is it what you're representing? Is it the expectations? I've been on teams where we weren't picked to win and then we did.
Yeah.
And there's something special and different about that.
Yeah.
But I've also been on teams that were expected and we did. And there's something special
about
that. But I think to answer, it's the Olympics.
Yeah, you can find pride in both because when you're the team that's expected to win, there's more pressure.
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah. When you're the underdog, it's like however far you get, people are pumped.
Sometimes it's just a relief to win.
Yes.
Like I think in the situations
for the Olympics,
certainly
there's
for
a little
guys,
bit of a relief.
The expectation is perfection. And so once you get there, you're like, well, thank God we didn't fucking lose because that'd be terrible.
Did Monica already brag and tell you she's a 2-time state champion cheerleader?
I did not tell them.
Monica.
I kept that to myself.
Yeah.
High flyer.
But I'm glad it's coming up now.
High flyer. I got you, girl.
Thank you.
I'm your wing man.
We won back to back. And the first year, we were totally underdogs. And it was just pure
special.
Happiness.
Pure
it was
joy.
So special. It was so great. And then the next year, we were supposed to win. And it was like down to 1 point. And it was pure relief, which also felt amazing. But
proving
they are
people
two
right.
completely
yeah.
different feelings. And it's wild.
As an outsider, I would want the first. Because the other
the
one seems like relief's not a great
I know.
feeling to chase. You know, it kind of implies that things were pretty shitty before
or
we
scary.
Got to the relief.
It's scary. It's just like an abatement of fear, really.
You're also trying to recreate something from the year before.
Yes.
And that's a trap.
Yeah, totally.
You're like, but last year, guys, we did it like this. And this happened. Or last year, we did it like that.
Yeah.
And it's a total trap that everybody, when they're trying to repeat, falls into.
To the relief point. There also is something special about being able to be like, oh no, I am who you thought I was. The best.
Yeah.
It's like at the end of the day,
fluke.
I'm still an American. So I'm like, oh no, I am the best in the world.
There
is something about proving that to yourself. And when you are on those teams that have those expectations and you get to look around and just be like, oh no, we are who we thought we were. That is special too. But there's something just unexpected and a surprise about winning when you weren't expected. That's just a different kind of special, I think.
What tropes from male sports got grafted onto female sports that didn't work? I kind of think of, we just had an expert on talking about medically how we've not basically studied women. So we find out, oh, wow, guess what? You guys are twice as sensitive to Ambien. Oops. You know, all these things pop up.
They used to just like give us Ambien. And I'm like, I mean, I'm going to take it, but like also,
also I'm going to wake up at Rite Aid buying something.
Yeah.
And none of my male friends are doing this on Ambien. What's
going
on? I'm
also going to stay up for 30 minutes, obviously, to see what's going on here. But
try to find my place in space and time.
Ambien was crazy. That was a crazy time period in America.
I never had the Ambien train.
They would like give it to us on planes.
People were peeing in aisles.
Yeah.
And,
it was, yeah. That's
what a gross. Yeah. We went crazy for it for a minute.
Yeah, sure did.
But do you think there's been things because so much of this famous coaching and these famous approaches, they originated in male sports, and which ones of them are like ill-fitting and have proved to be, that's actually not how we perform best?
A big part of what happens and what gets overlaid is that if it doesn't look and feel exactly like men's sports, which of course it isn't because it's women's sports, then it's lesser. Everything is just automatically like, it's not going to be entertaining. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to make money. Nobody likes it. Nobody wants to watch. And it's like, that's actually just not true. Women's sports, there's a ton of similarities because it's sports, but it is a different business. It's a different fan base, different business model. Things aren't exactly the same.
If you go the business route for the WNBA, a big mistake was we took the NBA CBA, like 2003, I think is when we first became independent. The NBA actually owned the entire WNBA up until 2003, and then it went to individual team ownership, which is more the model we're all familiar with now. That's how NBA is now.
Okay.
So WNBA goes individual, so we now have to have a collective bargaining agreement, and we basically just took the NBAs and like copy-pasted it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, that doesn't fit. We didn't really get to change that until our last one, which was 2019.
What was ill-fitting about it?
Certain ways in which free agency was going to work, certain ways in which the salary cap was going to work, certain rules. Well, one big one is that we didn't have maternity leave. So like, that's different.
Yeah, right.
That's the most obvious and most glaring. And then there's other smaller ways in which our league didn't get to have fun free agency.
Yeah.
NBA, what do we all love about the offseason? The free agency. Yeah. Where are these people going to go?
We were limited. The drama of it all.
Yeah, it just didn't work for our league. So there's like a business part to it. I think there is like a medical part, right? Nutrition, the way we lift, the way we work out. We've always been following male guidelines and we're obviously different. I feel like where you're going, correct me if I'm wrong, is are we being coached in a way?
Yeah, I think there's this kind of alpha dominance model. There's fun coaches. We interviewed this Seattle Seahawks coach, and he's an anomaly, and that's not his approach. There are ways that I talk to other dudes that I don't speak to women that way. I just think there are differences in how we communicate and how we're going to excel best. And I imagine you just inherited a bunch of these, whatever worked for these legendary coaches.
So I've played for men, I've played for women. There's always been this unspoken understanding, or not understanding, maybe like a knowing that like the women coaches are more emotional.
Right.
And that's been a negative.
From the outside or no, internally
even,
on the team?
Even internally. Like, I don't want to play for her. Like, she's just so much more emotional.
Meanwhile, they're not. Men are more emotional.
Yes.
And throwing stuff and having tantrums and not being able to control their emotions or name their emotions. It's just anger.
Yeah. But to your point, it's like, I think now we're finally getting to a place where we're questioning that. Like, well, is that bad?
Right.
Because women are, in my experience, are more collaborative. We do like to do things together.
Yeah,
emotionally intelligent. And we take that into consideration.
You look each other in the eyes when you talk. You don't need to go on a walk and like look at other things.
I think the egos are different in women's sports than they are in men's. They exist.
Yeah.
They exist.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say it. They exist. But I think it shows itself differently.
Yeah.
Right.
And we've always used the male model for judgment on those things.
Yes.
And I think it's starting to shift. And you're starting to see coaches. I'm not super familiar with what the Seahawks coach was saying, but I think in women's basketball, you're starting to find coaches that are looking to do it differently.
The notion that you would have one coaching strategy for the white kid whose dad was also the quarterback at Stanford who's arrived, and then now this other kid from the inner city who's black who didn't have a dad and hates male figures for good reason. But we're going to treat these two the same. You know, one who's like had respect for authority for a good reason. He had a great authoritarian above him looking out for him. And another, you know, how on earth do you have one strategy that's going to motivate both of these kids in the same way? And I think he's really taking into account that.
I had a coach where we had a player who was dyslexic and she totally changed how she drew up plays, how she described things. I think to your point, it's like meeting somebody where they are.
Yeah, I mean, is your goal to break a person and get them to follow your strategy, or is it to figure out what would help them best excel?
I have a lot more respect for coaches that can adapt versus the ones like, this is how I do it. I've had success this way. You fit me.
You meet me here.
Yeah.
You guys will come and go. I'll be here and this is my show.
I think historically there's been also the vibe with coaches that they're the boss and the players work for them. And it's like, no, we're all coworkers. Your job is to lead the team and make decisions. And there's certain decisions that are your job that aren't my job as a player. But also, I don't work for you. We're all working in an organization together. We can all respect each other and give each other the space to have different ideas or to disagree or whatever it is. I think historically with men and women's sports, there's also the added layer of sexism. And then if there's sexual abuse that happens or sexual harassment or just like the vibes of it, there's all of that happening as well. But I think even with men, just the sort of abuse that happens of just like, I'm going to tell you what to do no matter what. And it's a privilege for you to be here. And it's like, no, they're here because they're just as talented, probably more talented than you are. Yeah, and we're all working together to do this.
Yeah, like Bobby Knight throwing chairs at people and stuff. It's just like, well, that's
hysterical.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, my God.
Emotional.
We did just have a psychologist on that was saying men are allowed to share their emotions, but in sport. That's the only place a man is allowed to cry with happiness or cry with disappointment.
Or hug each other or show physical affection
grab each
to each
asses.
Other.
Yeah,
they do that weird pouting.
Yeah, you can tell they have this little window to be intimate with each other. Like, squeeze. Like, they can't wait.
We started on homoeroticism in male sports.
it's strong.
It's there.
Yeah.
How old is the WNBA? I should
it's
know
like
that.
28.
Okay.
Ish
it's
years.
Still so
since
new.
97. Yeah.
Well, even when you were saying new. You didn't grow up with it, mm-hmm. so the Olympics was the big goal. I was like, oh, that's weird because I felt like for basketball, the Olympics isn't it, but for men's basketball, I mean, I'm sure it's still great, but for them, I feel like that's like an extra.
Mm-hmm. Well, their version was more like, I'm going to go be famous on a team. Then I'll come together as this all-star party group.
Yeah. Money skews it.
Yeah.
Icing on the cake to go do something for the purity of it. That was the finish line for a female.
Yeah. I think the men do take a lot of pride when they play on the Olympic team, but their decision to do it, it's totally different.
Yes. Yeah. They're flying there first class. Yeah. They're at a very nice place. They don't even stay in the camp, I don't think.
Yeah, we don't. So USA Basketball, men's and women's, it's one thing. So we do everything together.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
And do you like men's basketball?
I do. I'm a big fan.
Who were you most pumped to be in a camp with?
Like before?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like 23 years old. I'd never met Allen Iverson.
Oh,
so I was like, well, he's kind of cool. Some of my favorite memories were just on the bus going to probably opening ceremony or something. And the whole time he was just like, name a sport, give me a month, I'll be an Olympian. He was like, name it. We were like, swimming.
Would.
He was like, give me a month. Because that's how insane of an athlete he is, to be honest.
Wow.
And so, that was gorgeous. Cool. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Ugh, I know.
Honestly, spending time with all of them. I could go down the list. Fun. We have good times.
I think what I like most about the Olympic men's basketball team is these guys, they're all the best on their teams. They all have huge egos. They're all just like Mr. Man out there. And then they get there and the hierarchy shows itself.
Yes.
And I'm like, ooh, I like it. I like the drama.
Yeah.
I like the drama.
Psychologically,
it's really interesting because they're all good enough to play. And then you get in the game and it's like, oh no, this is Steph, LeBron, and KD. Or you get in the game and it's Asia, Stewie, and really those two were the best.
2004 Athens Olympics is the one I'm referencing with Allen Iverson, LeBron, D. Wade, Melo are on that team.
Wow.
They didn't play a lot. No.
That's crazy.
I was on the team with Diana Taurasi. We were kind of the young bucks. We didn't play a lot.
Oh,
so the five of us were just like every night, like, what the fuck? This is fucking bullshit.
How many minutes do you get tonight? Olympics sucks.
Yeah. It's an interesting experience.
I love the drama. I mean, I'm here for all drama.
That's why I love the movie The Departed. Forget the movie itself. Because you take like the eight biggest movie stars in the world and put them in scenes together. And you're like, ooh, who am I going to look at?
Yeah.
And for my money, I was like, fucking Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson.
I'm a huge Leo fan, but I'm sorry. They're in a two shot. I'm like, all eyes on Jack Nicholson. Ooh, it's tasty.
I know. I do. I'm like,
we're hierarchy creatures. Yeah, we love it.
I like to see it all play out.
Now, one of the other things I imagine, maybe you guys have thought a lot about this because you're part owners of different sports teams now. There was the tropes of the sport itself and then maybe the coaching and these different things, but also the spectator experience has always been very male, right? Some military dudes are going to fly in. We're going to send the jets over the thing. We're going to have some sexy cheerleaders. Clearly, the whole entertainment package is to appeal to men. And I don't know how much thought ever went into like what would the WNBA viewers that are female getting other than the game. Is that part of the thing that's been left out?
Yeah. So interestingly, the New York Liberty, who are in the WNBA finals now, they moved to Brooklyn a couple of years ago. So they had to change their mascot up and they have Ellie the Elephant. I think it's like short for Ellis Island or something like that. This mascot has tapped into something, I think, in terms of spectators, fans, the connectedness to it. It's like arguably Ellie is like bigger than the players.
That's not really, but
she was just on stage with Justin Timberlake.
Oh my God.
When he performed at Barclays. Was on stage when Missy and Sierra came through, performed with Sierra.
Whoa.
So the show, when you go to the game, is very much about the game and very much about Ellie. People go for Ellie. And I think that speaks to women's basketball fans. If you see her perform, you'll understand what I'm saying.
I must. I need to,
have to see it.
Check it out.
She's twerking and dancing.
She does like she'll do like a Beyonce
set. She's like, this is my show.
The football team that Natalie's an investor in here has done such a great job is like the experience is incredibly fun and they're sold out and it's a party and they've like figured out how to make that whole experience, not just the game, really deliver what they would want.
Yeah.
I think too, men's sports has not always been an actually safe place for a lot of people to go. If you think about an NFL game,
you can say the Raiders.
Yeah. Or the Cowboys or anybody else, you know, take 2016, 17, 18, and you are a queer person trying to go to the game. You're, you know, a black family trying to go to the game. Maybe it's just not always the safest place for you. And it's very much marketed like, this is who we are. It's jets flying over. It's explicit conservative patriotism. And for women's sporting events, I think this has always been true. Basically, it's like, don't be racist, misogynistic, sexist, or homophobic. That's the rules, period. And then have fun. Bring your friends. Bring your family. Be queer. Be black. Be whatever you want to be. And just come and enjoy the sport that's being played.
Without getting knifed in the parking lot. I, as a tall, strong, white dude, have been afraid to go to a lot of these games, just to include myself in that.
It's aggressive. It's hyper-masculine. Yeah. There's a lot of alcohol. It's drunk. There's people fighting.
All the men felt emasculated by the physiques of the players.
I mean, traditionally, I think women's sports has just had its own fan base for a very long time. Yeah. And I think as women's sports has gotten more popular over the last 5, 6, 7 years, people are coming to the games because they want to support something bigger.
A woman
who's suffering equal pay issues in her own job is like, you know what? I'm going to the soccer game.
Critics would probably go, I guess they would parallel it with like, I'm going to vote for that person because they're black or they're female. And they would go, you need to vote for them on their character or the this or that. It feels adjacent to that. So where a critic might go like, it's got to be about the sport. It shouldn't be about the movement around it or the vibe around it. But I would argue what has made the NFL so popular is it is that it's the same thing. Yeah, it has
the,
this.
They're culture. The ones doing identity politics. Yeah.
I'm gonna do my fan rundown. The way I see it is this: in sports, there's like three buckets of fans. Okay. There's the diehards. They love the sport. They're in no matter what.
They're
doesn't
like
matter.
Doing their own stats.
They're traveling to road games. Then there's the people that don't give a shit. And that's okay too. There's people that don't like certain sports and they just don't care. You'll never get them. And then there's the bigger bucket, which is the casual fan. And I think for women's sports, we've had a really hard time tapping into the casual fan at times. And that's what you're seeing in this rise. It's the more casual fan where it doesn't have to just be about the game. For some, it is. Right. For some, it's not. I remember when the Sounders, which is the MLS team in Seattle, when they started to get really big, and they average, I think, like a league best.
Yeah, they're 40,000.
It's like 40,000
a game. Yeah, they're selling it every game.
And so I went to a game, and the first thing I noticed was, okay, everybody's got the scarf on. People love a scarf in soccer. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
In-group.
Like, what
in-group.
The fuck is that?
In-group. That's right.
They were doing a tailgate thing. Then we got to the game, and a large percentage of the people around me clearly did not know the rules.
Right.
And then I was like, what is happening here? And I was like, oh, you're a part of something. There's a community. So for some, it's that.
Yes.
And so I just think that casual bucket, who cares where they're going? Something touched them and they're going.
Yeah,
and women's sports is finally tapping into that. Because for a while, we were just the punchline.
Yeah.
And so the casual fan was like, why do I go to a WNBA game? They're making fun of it on SNL.
Right.
That's all changing.
I might as well go to a baseball game.
Yeah. It's cool to be at an NBA game. It's cool to be at an NFL game.
Yeah.
They don't care about the sport either.
I'm so that. I'll end up at one or two baseball games a year. Maybe a football game, maybe a basketball game. And I am going because sitting outside and eating a hot dog at Dodger Stadium in the summertime
Awesome.
It's just incredible. The game's so boring and slow. Like, you, you're not going to miss shit. You can talk a lot. Yeah. Every now and then you're like, oh, fuck, we're standing up. Everyone's standing up.
Home run.
It's just an event. It's a fun thing. It's change up your weekend.
Yeah, and then I go to a hockey game, and I'm like, this game's spectacular. Why don't I watch it? It's so fast in person. And then I just went recently to LAFC, and I was like, this game is so dynamic in person and so fast that I don't know why they can't capture that yet perfectly on camera. But I'm like, oh, this is incredible. And same thing, the soccer movement is, I think, the movement of movements in sports. It feels like people especially have a sense soccer that it hasn't been defined yet, and they can have ownership. Right?
I think there's some of that.
It's a real sort of counterculture vibe. Yeah. Sounders have that definitely here in LAFC, the chanting. And it's like all the football fans have been captured. The baseball fans have been captured. It's classic America sports. And this is like, ooh, it's a little subversive.
Right.
I think we like
soccer's
that.
Always been that way. So I played soccer as a kid, and I hated jocks. I didn't like football players or any of that stuff. But I played soccer because it was like a punk rock thing to do.
Yeah.
It's always kind of had that vibe. And I'm glad to see it's like carrying into the professional side.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a cool vibe with all the supporters groups, and they're yelling, and they got the flags and the flares and the tifos, and it's crazy.
And the scarves.
And the scarves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, there's a whole section at the LAFC game. The tickets exist just for this union of people. Mm-hmm. No one else can buy them.
The supporter group people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like Mad Max. They're banging on trash cans, and they sing the entire time.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Quite incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so how long ago do you decide to start the podcast?
It started during the pandemic, just on Instagram Live, because we were like, we know what the people need.
us drinking.
Yeah, us drinking and fucking around. That's sort of the ultimate origin story. But then we did a couple of live shows, and those were just fun.
Like at the Women's Final Four.
Tell me more. Yeah. Like, what was this?
Like a bar restaurant.
Like a little bar
tickets. The fans come, and then we get up there, like, and we kind of do like a version of a live podcast, basically.
With a guest or without a guest?
Usually with guests.
And you have a list of topics you're going to go through. And how many did you set out to do, and how many did you end up doing?
Yeah. We're pretty good. We'll go long.
Okay, yeah.
That's kind of our, I feel like we're
learning. Yakking.
We don't know how to not go long.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But we're at certain events that beg for certain topics to be talked about.
Yeah.
So there's not like as much leeway. We're at the Final Four. We're talking about basketball.
Talking about that. Yeah.
I missed one thing I want to talk about before the podcast. You guys met in Rio at the 2016 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But you were in a separate village with the basketball players?
Yeah. So we met at the Nike house, I think.
Getting free shoes.
Yeah.
This is Dax's dream. He's always talking about falling in love at the Olympics as athletes.
Thanks for painting it in such a positive light. Yeah, yeah. I think about fucking.
Well, that's what the village.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
everybody's in amazing shape.
Yeah. You're just never going
to see it. I always say it's the one place you go, to be honest, to like feel like shit about yourself, because everybody looks
even perfect. Better.
So good. Yeah, like you think you look good, and then you see like a track and field athlete.
Yeah,
and you're like, holy fuck.
And you're like,
oh yeah.
Have I ever done a sit up? Like, yeah, I know. It's happening.
Because like we're obviously in shape, but we're not worried about 1/10 of a second.
Right, exactly.
And that's a different kind of shape.
Well, that's my favorite part of watching the Olympics is, oh, this activity gives you that body. That's fascinating. All the female volleyball players, sand volleyball, all look the same. All the sprinters look the same.
All the soccer players look the same. So when we first started dating, I was actually, like I said earlier, I'm only 5'9". In my world, I'm tiny.
Yeah.
I'm in the back, in the middle seat, always in the car. Like always. I just took that on as my identity. Then we got together and her teammates were like, she's huge.
Yeah.
She's a freak.
Shotgun for Sue.
Where'd you get this giraffe?
Literally.
Wow.
And it was interesting because I was like, oh, as a soccer player, you have to be of a certain height and build because you have to
run.
You have to be able to run. If you can't run fast, you can't play.
Right.
Yes. And so run forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
For 40 minutes straight. Yeah. So you guys were at the Nike store.
The Nike house.
People do houses.
Oh, tell me more.
USA has a house.
Okay.
Nike has a house. I'm sure Adidas has a house.
Party house for mingling?
It's more like a place to go because the Olympics are kind of wild. And for the athletes, you're in the village. You don't really get to see your family. They can't come in the village. So a lot of brands, a lot of different people will have these houses, which is really just a place you can go and bring your family.
Oh, okay.
See your people.
They'll have like events
out,
or they'll have food or they'll have a little shopping section or sometimes they'll throw a party. And it's kind of these multi-use spaces that's like Nike setting
spot
up here for the Olympics kind of deal.
And you were both there. Who were you with? Teammates or family?
I was with my teammates.
Our team had already gone out. We like bombed out of the Olympics.
Yeah, they lost. I think you were there socially.
Yeah.
Like just hanging out.
Licking socially your wounds and getting free vodka Red Bulls.
Yeah, literally. A lot of my teammates, we weren't even in Rio for our games. Soccer travels all over, so we hadn't even gone to Rio yet. Most of my teammates, it was pretty devastating loss. We did terrible. They were like, we're going home. This is awful. And I was like, well, I'm going to drown myself in Rio, and I'm going to have myself a ball. There was like six or seven of us that went down there. It was great.
So you had not met before.
We're in the same agency, not the same agent. And we both play in Seattle in our professional team. We knew of each other. We had met once. But what the Olympics really marked was like, this is dumb. We're both in Seattle. Why aren't we friends and hanging out? Why aren't our teams hanging out?
Right.
This is stupid. And that's really how it started.
Okay. And then so you're chatting at this party. You're going, oh, it's crazy. We don't hang out. We both live in Seattle. How quickly, though, are you going like, I'm acting like we should be friends for this greater purpose of our Seattle kinship?
Are you going to tell someone at the time?
Okay.
So that...
complicated
dating things.
I was engaged to someone at the time, so really, no, I'm like dating. I was engaged to someone at the time, and we were going through a little bit of a rough patch, and that wasn't going to work. And then obviously meeting Sue, it just became very clear that
clearly clear.
Yeah. So then it escalated. After I broke up
real fun.
I broke up with my fiance at the time, and then we started talking.
Okay. And then quickly, thick as thieves, do we become inseparable pretty fast?
Yeah, you know how lesbians roll.
Well, I have heard a great joke.
I do love the
one joke.
What is it?
They already know it. What do lesbians bring on a second date?
U-Haul.
A U-Haul.
So you bring a truck.
What do gay dudes bring on a second date? What second date?
I was gonna be like, another gay dude?
And there's like poppers? I don't know. Another gay dude?
That's a good joke.
It's
a true form. Those jokes exist for a reason.
Yeah.
When they hit a truth.
It is what it is.
Was it coordinated about retiring at the same time, roughly? It's not, right? You had done 20 years with Seattle. That's crazy. Is that a record in the WNBA? Were you the longest playing?
Maybe. Definitely up there.
Yeah, you and Diana, probably.
And Megan, you played for a very long time as well.
Yeah.
And so that just timed out kind of perfectly, I guess.
Yeah, it did.
And then collectively, do you start talking about, like, well, what are we going to do now with the remaining 45 years of our lives?
What the fuck do we do now?
And both people are scared, probably.
Yeah. It was my favorite Derek Jeter quote when he retired. He was like, oh, I went from being an old man to a young man. Because when you're 41 in sports, you're old as fuck.
Right.
And they treat you that way, and they talk about your age,
like,
and they ask you what you're going to do.
As soon as you hit 30, they're like,
what are you
going to
do
retirement
next?
Retirement conversation.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the minute you retire, like, oh, I'm young again.
Yeah.
This is great. I'm not the oldest one at dinners. This is
amazing.
Right.
Yeah. There's a Formula One race car driver named Fernando Alonso. Yeah, he's 43. In every lap that he's on TV, they're talking about it.
That
he's 43. And I'm like excited he's 43 because I'm 49. I'm like, you go get it, old timer.
Let him live. He's just driving his car. Just let him live.
In any other career trajectory, he'd be like mid-level right now, about to get his big shit coming in at 50. Yeah.
So what's interesting about that is you're in your late 30s, early 40s, but you're at an expert level in your career.
Yeah.
But now you get to go into this, what we call like the real world. And we do have an expertise that's unique. We hit that level of our career, but we're young again. And I think that's really where we are. And that's what makes what we're doing exciting. Like whether it's the podcast or the other business ventures that we're in, we have an expert level, but we're still pretty young.
You have time.
Yeah, that's a great way to frame it because it's very hopeful and there's so much opportunity when you're young.
Yeah.
There's still so much to come. Whereas most people, you're 40, you're in your track. That's pretty much that.
This is it.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. We, of course, have a gorgeous website that we designed, and by we, I mean Rob.
That's right.
On Squarespace, using their great templates, and it looks so beautiful, and it functions.
It's so official.
Yeah. So whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. If it's your first time creating a website, no worries. Squarespace Blueprint is a new guided system that helps you build a unique online presence from the ground up. Your site will be perfectly tailored to your needs. And with the help of engaging email marketing tools, you can share your brand story with your community and even grow your audience and reach through targeted email campaigns. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/tax to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/tax to get started today. We are supported by BetterHelp. This month is all about gratitude. I'm truly grateful for the people I'm surrounded by in my life. They mean the absolute world to me. They are the greatest gift I've been given. Here's a reminder to give thanks to those you hold near and dear. And while you're at it, give thanks to someone you might not thank enough, yourself. It's something we can easily forget, but it's an important act of self-love. We just had an expert on that revealed we're not very nice to ourselves.
We're not very self-compassionate at all. We got to get better.
It's important. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, making it super convenient for any schedule. Getting started is a breeze. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you're free to switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Dax to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Dax. We are supported by Pokemon and their incredible Pokemon trading card game. The Pokemon trading card game is a gift this holiday season that will delight gamers, collectors, and Pokemon fans alike. Parents, maybe you grew up collecting Pokemon or watching the show on Saturday mornings. Well, how fun would it be to bond with your kids over Mewtwo's psychic prowess, or how Pokemon can evolve from a cute Charmander to a fiery flying Charizard? Games are such a great way to get the whole family together. And if you don't already know how to play, no worries, because it only takes minutes to learn. Plus, Pokemon cards are not just fun to play with, they're also a joy to collect. They come in a variety of cool and captivating styles created by different artists, so there's something for everyone.
It's had a real resurgence. I was just at a friend's house in Georgia, and all the kids were playing this.
They were.
Yes, and it looked fun.
Find gift ideas for all ages and at every price point at tcg.pokemon.com/holiday.
With the podcast, what was so, and even our production company that we started and wanting to like get into media and content, storytelling is the most important thing, whether it's writers and their books or journalists storytelling what's happening in the world or storytelling and narrating around sports. And women's sports has had such a lack of storytelling, understanding, conversation, a lack of nuance. And we've lived, you say it all the time in a very non-arrogant way, like we really are the experts. We've lived through this crazy period of basically the last 25 years, where now we're at this period in sports where basically all the money's like, okay, fine, women's sports, we're going to do it. It seems like it's a good thing. Right. And now there's all this money coming in, and there's all this interest, and there's all these eyeballs, and stories need to be told. We are really in a position. It's uniquely, like, we know all the stories. We know where all the bodies
we
are buried.
We know how to tell
if we don't know it personally, we know the person who does know it personally.
Yeah.
We've lived it all. We've understood how we've gotten to this moment. So I think with the podcast and with our production company, we really feel like we're in this position to like narrate all the history, but also this is how we should be talking about women's sports. This is how it's different from men's sports. Because we also know men's sports. We're huge fans of men's sports for our whole lives. And we've have so much, whether it's The Last Dance or just watching it for so long, we have so much information about it. This is so exciting for us and why we even want to do this, because as you guys know, it's a lot of work to like sit in front of a mic and prepare and tell these stories and do this narration all the time.
Show up half hour late, it's hard.
Yeah.
We have at your own house.
No. Did you recording at 11? It was 10.
But it's a really exciting time, I think, for both of us. And what excites both of us about it is we really know what it is and how the story should be told to bring more people in, because we're like, this is amazing here. Women's sports is incredible. Yeah. Sports are incredible. It's one of the most vulnerable things you can watch someone do live, is to try their very hardest with their physical body in tandem with other people and like try to achieve this goal.
And somebody's trying to stop you.
And somebody's trying to stop you. Somebody's trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
We'll talk about story. Sports is the ultimate story. The objective's very clear. The stakes are baked in. Like, I don't watch a lot of sports, but I watch every single sports documentary. I don't think there's one I haven't seen.
Oh,
I love them all, because the second it starts, I know what the stakes are. I know what the goal is. I know what defeat looks like.
Sports stories are so human, whether you're climbing the face of El Capitan, which none of us can do. You can like understand the story of what Alex is doing up there.
Yes.
You know, or watching Power of the Dream, like your guys documented how they basically saved America. You understand what's happening and you can feel yourself in that.
It is so trite. It's like, I shouldn't even say it because it's so stupid to say, but it really is so true that representation matters.
Yeah,
it really huge. Matters. I just got this Barbie sent to me.
Yeah, we saw
the Diwali Barbie. Yes. Mm-hmm. I just saw it this morning. It was in the USA Today.
Yeah. I was like, they sent it to me and I was like, whoa. I had friends over for dinner and I was like, you guys, look at this Barbie. It's so great. I literally said that and I was like, it's crazy that I never could say that growing up. I could never say, hey, guys, look at this Barbie that looks like me. It's so powerful to feel part of the group.
So you have a Barbie coming out, right?
Yeah, it came out.
Oh, it came out.
Yeah. So exciting.
I know.
Yeah. You're living the ding, ding, ding here.
Yeah.
You brought a Barbie. She is a Barbie.
You are one.
Yeah. I always joke, my Barbie has better knees than I do. I'm like low-key jealous. They made her bionic. I'm like, damn.
Oh, that's exciting.
I need that technology.
Yeah. No, it really does matter. I feel that's what's so cool about women's sports. It's like, yeah, you're talking about gay women and black women and queer women and straight women and white women. It's like, there's a million things going on in here and everybody can find their place in it. Yeah.
I think it goes even beyond that because I think the hardcore misogynistic male defenders of male sports would probably say, no, golf is intrinsically interesting and the NFL is intrinsically interesting. But if you look at the viewership, it's like, no, you need Tiger Woods to show up.
Yeah.
He's a person whose story we get fascinated on and it quadruples sports. Drive to Survive comes out and we learn the personalities of these race car drivers.
That was me.
Yeah. Same. I didn't like it before.
I was like, am I an F1 super fan?
Yeah.
Yes.
She is.
Because
I am.
They gave us the protagonists.
Yes.
And then it 4X'd in America, F1. There's so many elements, but it's also like, shamefully, I know Cheryl Miller. That's who I knew. I just know she's great. I didn't get to see her be great, really. I didn't see any college basketball games of hers. I just know her stats.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, those are fucking wild. But you need these kind of breakthrough superstars that ignite interest in these sports. The sports themselves aren't...
Nothing's intrinsically interesting.
It's all the story around it. It's all the history around it. It's all of the little things that pull you in. That's why I love the Olympics so much, because they show you the pre-story, and especially how it used to be, where it was like, it's coming on at prime time. They show you the story, and then you watch that person go and run around the track.
Did you guys watch Sprint before the Olympics?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I care more about this than anything in the world.
I am locked in.
Yeah.
Shikari, I love you. I want to see you win.
All of those things matter. And then you're invested in it. And then, sports are sports. They're fun. And it's an event to go to, like a concert or a comedy show or the farmer's market, or you go to sports. It's like, this is something that we're doing for entertainment. I think there's something that you always say that's like, not every sport is for every person. You said baseball was boring, but you can maybe go on time and enjoy it. Or you don't go at all and you don't love it. And you say, I'm literally stealing this for you, but it's like, but you don't shit on baseball every day. You don't spend all of your time.
It's threatening my identity.
Right. You're not spending all of your time on the platform that you have to make sure everybody knows you hate baseball.
And it has no value. And it's
that's
not worth
what
it.
People do to women's sports.
So it's like you don't
have to even come to the most popular ones that you'll probably like. You don't even have to do that. But why do you have to shit on it?
Yes.
Why do you have to tear that down?
Yes.
Why is it threatening?
That's the point.
It's okay if you like one thing better than another.
I would argue that, and I can't really pull like an exact example, but I might argue that, I'm not going to argue this. Someone might say men's tennis is more, athletic, exciting than women's tennis.
Okay.
And yet, aren't there people that prefer women's tennis?
Yeah.
So it is just the preference. And then back to what Megan said. Women's basketball is a great example. We don't dunk. We have to deal with this all the time. You guys don't dunk, it's boring.
That's the big complaint?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not in the silo enough.
Yeah.
I don't hate the WNBA, so I don't know.
I love that.
But it's like you constantly have to answer that. But it's like, okay, you don't like it. That's fine. But what she said, why do you feel the need to shit on it? Because that shitting on it has infested and gotten in the veins of like the cultural cachet of it all.
What's your armchair explanation for this? You could just go misogyny. Great. But
for basketball, I have one.
Oh, great.
It's very specific to basketball.
Okay, great. I want to hear it.
Okay, so different from some other sports, particularly team sports, a lot of men, boys, play basketball. They play it.
Really
they true. Play it on the park. They play it in gym class. They play it on their teams in elementary school, middle school, so on and so forth. And they think they're good. And what do men a lot of times do, in my experience, is they're constantly sizing the women's basketball players up. And so they're looking like, I could do that.
Right.
I could beat you.
Right.
And that is their way of like flexing that they could do it and therefore it doesn't have value.
Yes.
So that happens a lot. And I think it's because basketball is just such a popular sport in our country. I can't even tell you how much I encounter that.
Yeah, no one's mad at women swimming. No. Because no one thinks they're a good swimmer.
No one thinks they're like, a good swimmer.
Like, I can just barely swim.
Soccer, so Megan doesn't get this. Rare, if ever, does she have a guy come up to her and be like, I could take you.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, well, if it's not an actual one-on-one game, it's a game of horse.
Do dudes do that to you a lot?
All the time. I'm constantly, so now a lot of times it's friendly. They're not being jerks. It's like a friendly banter. Maybe, you know, we're out at a bar. I don't know what it is, but it happens all the time. I'm smaller. Sometimes it's someone who maybe did have a good high school career, maybe played D2, D3. And I always say, this is always my response. I'm like, if I had your body, I'm like, you'd be looking at the highest paid player in the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's just that I don't, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's
I'm not 6'4 and 212.
Yeah. Anyways.
That's a really good take, how easily men feel emasculated.
Definitely.
And then it just became the thing to shit on.
Yeah, because I had a hot take in defense of men. It was about Taylor Swift. And it was about a very common male thing to happen was when women would find out she had given her road staff like $18 million or something, which is by all accounts a radical gesture. We kept hearing, this became a topic, remember this? Men would be telling their girlfriends like, well, yeah, she makes $1 billion. Of course she can give $18 million. Like they couldn't latch on to how cool it was she had done that. I was like, why is that the reaction? I really need to understand what's going on in their body when they choose, I gotta bash this. And I was like, oh, I think they're like, my girlfriend and my wife loves this woman. I can't really compete with anything she does. I'm not a singer. And now she's really generous. Well, I'd be generous too if I had $1 billion. It's like this weird—
Put it down?
Yes, it's like somehow they're less because Taylor had this generosity and they have to point out, well, it's not very generous. I would give someone that too if I had $1 billion.
And also another one.
Yeah.
And also Elon Musk is doing exactly what he's doing with his billions of dollars.
Yes, I know.
Not to say that all men are Elon Musk, but we have questions.
But it's like, what is going on? Why is that the standard reaction?
I've been at dinners. We've been at dinners with close friends and some of them are married couples, men, women. And there was this one topic that went around of who's the best shooter. And by the way, a lot of my friends are former athletes also, basketball players. The women are. And their husbands didn't play in college, but they played. I've seen them play. They're decent. And we went around the table. Who's the best shooter at the table? I didn't get picked first. It was crazy.
Despite the stats.
Or it was, well, okay, yeah, I guess we have to pick Sue first. And I just don't know.
Because
if they're
she's
at the table.
Fucking best.
Yeah. Because that's the answer.
Yeah. I'm not even going to go in the Steph Curry route. If they're at the
Reggie
table
Miller.
With, yeah, Jason Kidd. Not even the best of the best, but like they would ever say, well, I guess we have to put Jason first.
Yeah.
Because
right.
Steph Curry,
exactly.
Ray Allen, Reggie Miller. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, of course, guys. Yeah. LeBron even. So you could argue LeBron's not the greatest shooter of all time. Anyone could make that argument. And yet they would still be like, oh, LeBron's first.
Yeah.
And I was just looking around. I was like, guys.
Get real.
What are we doing here?
Let's go to the three-point line right now.
Yeah, like, what's happening?
For women in general, it's like, what's it going to take?
Men's ball, women's ball, volleyball, beach ball, pick it. Let's go.
I think there is something about, and I think this generally happens in equality conversations, but there is something about women getting more rights that feels threatening. And it's like, no one's taking your rights away, men. No one's doing that. That's not inequality that we're having more rights.
Yeah, we're just trying to get the ones you already have.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree, but I'll add, if I can give my most generous good faith explanation, is these guys already feel like they can't get a woman and they had some path in the 50s. Like, well, if I go get a job and I earn some money, I'm going to end up with one. And I think it's a little bit more of the insecurity of like, if they don't need me, will I ever have anyone? If I can be the most generous, I think a fear is driving it of like, well, if they don't need me, why would they be with me? Less than maybe, well, in practice, it would be, I don't want them to have it, so they do need me.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to really figure out what's going on in the person. Like, what fear is actually happening that they're behaving in a way that's repugnant?
Well, I do think there's something that's generally happening in America with the falsehood of the American dream of if you work hard and do X, Y, and Z, then you'll get X, Y, and Z. Whether that's in a job, which is not true anymore. There used to be a path for it, and then corporations got greedy and are blaming it on immigrants that now you can't have this pathway to have a job and have a life and success because other people are taking it. It's like, really, corporate profits have gone up crazy. So there's that part. But then there's also this part of, oh, you're a guy. These are the things that you deserve. You're entitled to a woman.
And it's like, no, nobody's entitled to anybody else. Women don't not need men. Yeah. Obviously, not every woman is a gay woman. Otherwise, that would be a problem. That would be a problem. But like, you're not entitled to this other person. So what are you bringing to them?
Yes.
What are they bringing to you? The relationship is just becoming more equal. Men, I think, have historically been told, be hypermasculine, do these things, don't show any emotion. And they are going through a crisis.
Yeah. We're asking for something a little different.
Yeah. And I also am kind of like, and that's not our emotional labor to hold. That's men. Yeah. You guys have to take that on yourself and figure that out. We have to do that for ourselves while fighting against the threat that is inequality. I think men are going through a crisis. I feel that and I see that and I am empathetic to that. And also, we figured it out like under the boot so you guys can do it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that needs to come from men, people who have figured it out to help these boys.
And you, me and you.
I'll help.
Yeah, we're together doing it.
Yeah.
You guys are so much fun.
Yeah, how fun.
I really like you. I'm even extra ashamed that I thought it was 11 because I would have loved another 20 minutes with you both. What's the name of your podcast?
A Touch More.
A Touch More. I listened to it. You guys have a very, very good flow and dynamic that's really good for space.
Thank you. We're learning.
We're figuring it out. Yeah.
It took us a good 30.
So many questions for
you guys.
We're
still learning.
Yeah.
The interviewing is probably where, as two people interviewing one person, that's a hard thing.
Yeah. It's really hard, and we've had to take the route. Two people really can't do it. If you're trying to come up with some grand arc, it's really kind of quite hard to do it that
way. We're figuring that out.
And then one other tip was just, we have found out too, it's really helpful that Monica hasn't saw the movie or read the book or done the thing because she's the totally audience. And if we're getting too esoteric, the guests and I, she's like, whoa, you guys missed a chapter or something. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
you
know? No one's going to follow this. So we're going to have to.
You need like an outsider's eyes on it at times.
Yeah, one time I couldn't help myself and I had to watch Fargo season 5. I had to. I couldn't stop. And then during the interview, I was panicked because I was like, I don't think this is good. I don't know because I watched it and I don't have the point for me to be objective anymore.
That's a good point.
And then I hope you guys will make docs. Are you going to make docs with your media company?
I think so, yeah. We got a couple of cool things coming out. We adapted a book, Cleat Cute. The show is going to be called Playing the Field.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, Sarah Tapscott, who did College Lives of Sex Girls, New Girl.
She's the College Girls.
Yeah, sorry, Sex Lives of College.
And the College Lives of Sexy Girls.
Yeah. Listen, honestly, one and the same. Yeah, I'm saying. You guys, she's our showrunner, so we're really excited about that one. And then we have like a reality show coming out.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
we're excited.
Yeah, so we got some good stuff.
Okay, so you're not going to be sitting around. There'll be a shooting schedule. Schedule's in your future.
We have lots of schedules. You know, Google Docs and calendars.
What is this? Will be inserted in the calendar.
Maybe. Yeah, literally.
Maybe.
Wild out here in these normal worlds.
Well, Sue and Megan, this has been so much fun. I hope you come back when you have one of these projects up and running to promote because I want more time with you guys.
Definitely.
You're
come back.
Wonderful. And I liked it.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you.
And maybe let your daughters win in horse. I think I changed my mind. I've been stewing over here.
Block them every time.
I know where I got you. I'm like, are they really college bound? No. That's a new situation.
All right, give them some affirmation.
Stay tuned for the fact check. It's where the party's at.
Okay, full disclaimer to the armchairies. It would feel dishonest to not say we attempted to talk about the election.
You want to go back?
Well, no, it just didn't go well. I would say that we tried, and of course, it's on our minds the most, and that seems like the topic we would be talking about. But we tried, and it didn't go well. So we're going to skip that.
Yeah.
And so it might be a short fact check, I guess, is all I'm saying. Because there's really no other details going on. It was election. Marsha.
A couple weeks ago,
Yeah,
it was, and it's still on our minds.
It's still lingering.
And
did you have
hope everyone's doing okay out there.
Me too.
So, Sue and Megan, very fun. Very, very, very fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So, I made the mistake of saying that the friends and family discount from the row is like they don't get stuff for free.
Yeah, you said it was small, right?
Yeah, it's
like
small.
That's what I heard.
No, I don't know.
You didn't commit to any numbers.
Yeah, I didn't commit to any numbers. This is what I heard through the grapevine, but I don't know it for sure.
Okay.
So, and there's obviously no information on that on the internet. Like, I don't know if Elizabeth Olsen's getting stuff for free. I hope she is.
She must be, but they also, let me ask you this. Do you think they're gifting to celebrities?
No.
Or they don't need to.
I don't think they gift. They definitely, like, people will wear their stuff to red carpet things, but they don't get to keep it.
They don't get to keep it. God.
I know.
They should let, there's a couple people they should let keep it. Cate Blanchett. Can't we let her keep it?
I would love that for her.
She deserves it.
I wonder who they would do it for. No one.
Wait, that reminds me. We're seeing a performance right now that is so off the charts.
Ooh.
Good. What is it? Well, first of all, we're watching season two of The Diplomat.
Oh, nice.
Which is great. And Keri Russell.
Love her. We have her on, friend of the pod. She's in the archives.
She drank a couple beers, which is so cool. She's our only guest who slammed a couple beers while she was there.
Yeah, right.
That I recall. Yeah. Could be wrong.
Yeah.
She's so consistently awesome. But that's not the one. Oh, I know who I want to applaud.
Okay.
Are you watching Escape from Dannemora?
No, I'm not.
Okay. We missed the boat.
Oh, no.
Big time. And I hate to admit this, but I loved, what's the other show? Ben's other show that we love.
Severance. My God.
We love Severance so much. I'm obsessed with Severance to the degree where I was like, you know what? Escape from Dannemora is probably excellent because he directed all that as well.
Right.
Not all of it, but, you know, he did the same thing as he's doing on Severance. It's phenomenal. And Patricia Arquette is like next level as this woman. And I found out a bunch of behind the scenes stuff. She gained and lost 50 pounds during production.
Oh my gosh.
Her look, the way it changes her. She is so dialed into this person. The show's phenomenal. I didn't even realize Benicio Del Toro is one of the leads.
He's awesome.
What an enigma. What is he doing? Why doesn't he work? How? I need to talk to him and understand.
He works when he wants.
And he works the hell out of it when he does.
Yeah.
He's so fucking interesting. And then Paul Dano's fantastic. It's a great, great show that we missed. I think because it was on Showtime. That's my explanation. But now it's on Netflix. You see, it's like, it was number two.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
I've had this. I was about to say it must be so rewarding, but I've had this with Chips, where all of a sudden Chips was climbing up to number one or two in movies over, you know, and it come out years before. It's such a fun thing.
Yeah.
I wonder from Ben's perspective what it's like to have this show that was out 10 years ago that's like number two on Netflix.
Yeah, how fun.
Yeah. And probably more people are seeing it now than ever saw it in its first run.
I am going to watch it. I need a new show.
To be able to play Alabama Worley at one point in her life, you don't know that character, do you? True Romance. Alabama Worley. Unbelievable. Ooh. And now to see her play this character, what a gap between those two characters.
Also, we haven't had her, but we have interviewed David Arquette, her brother.
And that didn't help
her. He's in the archives.
Yeah, he's in the archives. Check him out.
Just like Keri Russell.
A minute or two,
A minute or two with Keri Russell and...
Oh, right, they're all...
Actually, that David Arquette interview is a beautiful interview.
It is.
He is a very special person.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to watch that. Wait, why did we get on subject of friends and family discount?
Elizabeth Olsen, Cate Blanchett.
Yes.
Actors that should get free row merchandise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So add Patty Arquette to the list.
I think Elizabeth gets free stuff. I hope so.
Yeah, I think she probably does. If she wears it, might be an act of rebellion.
No, she supports her sister.
Yeah, they love each other probably.
Anyway, so I don't want it to come off like they're not generous.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know about
their
generosity.
So you didn't get the real number or anything. In general, you want to say maybe it is a really nice one.
Maybe it's 90%.
You know, if you followed a bunch of car accounts like I do on Instagram, you would have heard Porsche recently ended their friends and family discount for employees.
Really?
Yes. And the number was staggering because Porsches are generally hard to get. There's not a bunch of them at the dealership. You got to order one. You got to wait and all this stuff. So everyone that can get one, those executives, they all get one. Because they're ultimately end up being worth more and they're, you know. So, but it was in the tens of millions of dollars that they saved on the bottom line by getting rid of that. They're like, no more cheap Porsches for people who work here.
Really?
Yes.
That makes me kind of sad, though. They put in the time. They're representing their company.
It makes me sad, too, because also I grew up in a family that had the GM discount,
yeah,
which was relevant. Although often it was the same as whatever sale they were running. But in general, it was good. But I will say it's a slightly different business model, which is GM's making millions and millions of cars. Porsche's making a very finite amount of cars.
True.
And so, you know, at some point, if you go like, well, I don't know what the percentage was, but let's say 8% of our cars are just going to our own employees at this discount. This is untenable.
I guess so.
I think they decided it was untenable.
Huh. That's interesting. Because I also wonder how many people can like how many people aren't getting Porsches that would have got them? Probably not that many.
Well, right. These are highly paid German employees of Porsche. The Germans pay well.
Mm-hmm.
They pay their folks good.
Well, no, sorry. I guess I mean like because like they're giving these in their head, they're giving these Porsches away to their employees.
Yes.
And it's not good because other people.
It can't be a business that just builds cars for their employees, right, at no profit.
But are people who would buy a Porsche, not their employees, regular people who would buy a Porsche, are they not able to buy the Porsche?
Well, I think it's that it's a supply issue with Porsche.
Okay.
If
so
it
yes.
were like Tesla where they can make 100,000 a month, they
yeah.
go, no problem. They turn the dial up on the machine.
Right. Okay.
But I think they're having like supply issues and then they're going like, okay, well, we're selling a significant percentage of these to our own employees
yeah.
at this
that makes sense.
Cutthroat.
That's not a dream car for me.
None of them.
Porsche is not.
What about like the four doors? None of those appeal
to
you?
They look very pretty, but it doesn't feel like it's my personality.
So the one that I have been bouncing around about is I don't think their electric cars are selling well. The Taycans.
Oh, really?
Which are the only electric car I've ever driven that I love. Where I was like, oh, I love this car. Forget electric, non-electric. This is a phenomenal car. Bill Gates recommended.
Yeah.
That was the one. And then I reviewed one on Top Gear, and I loved it. So that planted a seed. Then they came out, Monica, with a fucking shooting brake style, a wagon.
Oh.
So they make a Taycan now in a wagon profile.
In electric?
Yes. And you know I love station wagons.
You do.
And they're really discounted.
Really?
Like shockingly discounted right now. And so for about 6 weeks, I spend at least 20 minutes of my day talking myself out of buying a Taycan station wagon. I'm like, oh, these are, I'll give you my argument when I'm convincing myself. Well, they're practically free. I mean, I think they're half off right now. It's such a good value.
Yeah.
Also, I should have an electric car. It'd be great if I reduce my carbon footprint. It'll do a little bit.
Yeah.
These are all like, now
those
it sounds like I've
things.
Got like a ethical cause
yeah.
on my hands, right?
You're on a moral high ground.
I'm on a moral crusade
mm-hmm.
to buy this car.
Yeah.
And then I go, no, Dex, you don't need another car. You don't even have time to drive another car. It would be another vehicle sitting here that needs to be maintained and serviced, and you don't want that. That's not going to up your enjoyment
wow.
of life.
That's good.
But then an hour later, I'm like, God, I saw one in red. I should really get one that's a wagon in red. And
also, I mean, it's probably good to get the electric car now while it's half off.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by Columbia Sportswear. I love Columbia Sportswear.
Trusted brand.
I just got a black puffer that's so sleek, and I got a very earth tone-y fleece.
Ready for the cooler months.
I'm ready for it, and I'm going to be adorned in Columbia Sportswear. From snowy trails to city streets, Columbia has you covered. Their Omni-Heat Infinity Jackets are the gold standard in warmth, pushing the boundaries of innovation. Inspired by space blanket technology, Omni-Heat Infinity uses an expanded pattern of metallic gold dots to reflect more body heat, delivering instant warmth without compromising breathability. With Columbia's Omni-Heat Infinity, you'll feel the difference as thermal reflective technology wraps you in warmth, whether you're hiking mountains or conquering your daily grind. Learn more at Columbia.com.
Well, my next car is definitely going to be electric.
Okay.
Well,
you should think about getting a Taycan
station wagon.
Yeah.
It's not really on brand for me.
What part?
Station wagon.
Because you're not cool? I think you're very cool.
I'm not cool enough to drive a station
wagon. Oh, I don't. We disagree on your coolness.
Thanks.
I think you can pull off Shave Side. I think an AMG's for you.
AMG is for me because it's a sedan. Ultimately, it's a
chic sedan for you because it just landed in your lap and you started driving. And you're like, yeah, I feel great in this. I don't think you would have gone to the dealership and picked that out.
I wouldn't have picked an AMG.
Right.
I would have picked
the normal sedan.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it turns out you're definitely pulling off an AMG. And when I hear you start your car down the block, I'm like, what a badass.
But all I'm doing is pressing a button.
I know, but it's rumbles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I do.
Do you like the sound of it when it starts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just wondering if that even appeals to you. Is that part of the visceral thing?
I kind of don't hear it anymore.
Okay,
yeah. When I first was doing it, I was embarrassed.
Right.
And
it's
now
too loud for
it
you.
It was really loud. It felt a little
toxic.
A little toxic. Uh-huh. A little toxic.
Uh-huh.
But now I don't even hear it, which is interesting because it's not like it went down. People still can hear it.
Yeah,
I just can't.
When I start my AMG wagon, I have a full 30 seconds of euphoria.
Wow.
I'm like, the way that low rumbles is so pleasing.
The other day I was somewhere and some car was driving by and it was so loud.
Obnoxiously loud.
And I was
irritated.
So angry about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It felt so disturbing and so entitled.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do you feel like you can
be
ruin everyone's
everyone?
Day?
Because that person loves that sound. So they're not thinking you don't love the sound. They're assuming you love the sound. They love the sound.
Do you think most people love like extremely loud sounds?
I don't know what most people think. I know that me and my guy friends all love the sound of an AMG. We love
this
the sound.
This is like times, this is not like the sound of an AMG.
Right.
This is times 4,000.
I think the best example everyone can relate to is a Harley. That's also a very polarizing sound for people.
Very loud. Too loud.
I remember Mike Judge going on and on for like 20 minutes how annoyed he is at this group that rides by his house and there's like 50 of them. He's like, how much attention do these guys need? He's like really going,
yeah.
They're all solid points. And at the end of it, I would have felt fraudulent. I go, I know I'm one of those guys. I love that sound. And I love when I hear a pack of bikes go by. I just love it.
Well, that's,
Teach their own is the saying,
I think. Oh, okay. She mentioned, Megan mentioned her sister who was sick. She had like really bad anemia.
Mm.
And she said her hemoglobin levels were like 1 or 2. And that sounded really bad. But I also didn't know what
the
normal
range.
Levels are. Yes. Yeah. For men, they should be between 13.2 to 16.6.
Okay.
And for women, 11.6 to 15.
Okay.
So
there's some overlap.
Bad.
13 to 15. There's some male-female overlap.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's one of the side effects that can happen to people on testosterone replacement therapy.
Oh, really?
Their hemoglobin can get too high.
Oh.
Eric's had this.
Oh.
That's never been a side effect I had, luckily. But for some people, that can happen. And then what the solution is?
Donuts.
Donate blood.
Oh,
you go donate some blood and then it lowers it all to normal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. Okay, speaking of medicines, I started my statin.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. When did you start it?
Thank you.
How many days ago?
Probably a week ago at this point.
Okay.
Maybe a little more than that.
You're feeling any?
Feeling fine.
Yeah, I don't think you can feel any difference.
Yeah, you can have, you're supposed to look out for leg numbness.
Okay.
Which I don't think.
And muscle pain.
Yeah, like maybe muscle stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That.
I haven't felt anything like that. I do think my appetite has gone down.
I think that's the stress
of our life.
The last week.
But I looked it up and it is a side effect.
Really?
Yeah. It can be a appetite suppressant or like makes you feel full. You know that?
Oh my God. It's like
Ozempic.
I was going to say it's like over the counter. Well, it's not over the counter, but
yeah.
It's like another.
So that's it. And I'm only taking half right now. I hope my doctor doesn't hear this.
Okay, see where that gets you.
But Dr. Richard Isaacson said I could start with half.
I had my first, did I already brag about this? My last hormone labs, which were like a month ago.
And they were perfect.
Well, I was under the cholesterol by a like, I've never been on, I haven't been under since I've been getting it checked.
Right. That's great.
Oh my, I didn't think this was a possibility.
Yeah. It's surprising because you eat so much red meat.
I know, but it's really not that. It's like your genetics.
Well, genetics is a huge thing, but red meat can really affect it, and okay. It can bring it down a ton if you cut it out.
Yeah.
But for you, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, my N1 experiment of having been vegan for a year, and my cholesterol didn't move at all.
Callie's mom went vegan, and it completely fixed her cholesterol.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I think that happens for people. I think if people don't have the genetic disposition where it's like they're just naturally high, which my whole family has been naturally high. When I did it with diet, it didn't really do anything.
Right.
I can have a lot of fiber. It doesn't really do much.
Yeah.
So the red yeast, and then now I'm on a new, instead of a statin, which blocks it somehow, there's a way to block the absorption. So I'm on a different one that blocks absorption.
And how's that going?
Really good. I mean, I had gotten myself to where I was already just teetering unhealthy.
Yeah.
But this put me into like positively healthy.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Richard Isaacson.
It's really helping us out.
Yeah. My internist asked if he could get enrolled in that study. And so did my mom.
Oh, yeah. It's a hot study.
Yeah. It's the hot study to be in 2024.
It is. Ellie the elephant they were talking about is the mascot.
Yeah, in New York.
Yeah, and I did look her up. She does look really cool. And she does twerk, and she dances, and she, like, flips her hair. She's very cool.
Well, funny enough, I would have never known anything about Ellie the elephant, except for when I was in New York a couple weeks ago, I was watching the news, and there was a whole thing about Ellie the elephant.
My God.
And I was like, oh, my God, this is the thing they're talking about. The city is obsessed with Ellie the elephant.
That's so funny.
She was on the nightly news.
Wow. Is Sue... Does she have the record for the longest player in the WNBA? She's one of Sue and Diana Taurasi. As of October 2024, Sue Bird led the all-time list of games played in Women's National Basketball Association. Let's see what that number is. Bird played 580 games for the franchise.
Okay.
Diana, as of September, has had the second at 565.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe...
You could be in longer.
Uh-huh, true.
And played less games.
True.
Yeah, you could have an injury and be out for a season. You're still... That's a year you were in the WNBA, but you were out...
Definitely.
50 games.
But I think this is how they quantify it. So that's cool.
Yep.
That's it for Sue and Megan. Not many facts, just fun.
A lot of fun. Light on facts.
Heavy on fun. And heavy on information. It is really cool to have these women who represent women's sports and know a lot about it.
Yeah,
the inside and obviously, like, objectively and subjectively, I would say.
Yeah.
And Sue said that you could let the girls win at basketball. She turned a corner on that.
She switched mid-interview.
She did.
I wonder if when she left, she was like, well, now I regret switching, actually.
Yeah, she's been back and forth since then.
I think the key was, I think she would keep her original opinion if your child had expressed a goal to end up in a professional sport. I think the turning point was me saying, like, they're not en route.
Yeah.
To any professional organization.
Yeah.
So
what's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. I love you.
Love you.
Follow Armchair Expert on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to every episode of Armchair Expert early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In a quiet suburb, a community is shattered by the death of a beloved wife and mother. But this tragic loss of life quickly turns into something even darker. Her husband had tried to hire a hitman on the dark web to kill her. And she wasn't the only target. Because buried in the depths of the internet is the kill list, a cache of chilling documents containing names, photos, addresses, and specific instructions for people's murders. This podcast is the true story of how I ended up in a race against time to warn those whose lives were in danger. And it turns out convincing a total stranger someone wants them dead is not easy. Follow Kill List on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Kill List and more Exhibit C true crime shows like Morbid early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. Check out Exhibit C in the Wondery app for all your true crime listening.